As the United States makes a transition from military and space technology toward emphasis on the civic sector, so too the high technology companies must change. Vast quantities of unused ideas, or ideas which have thus far been exploited only in military or space work, lie fallow in the archives of the Department of Defense, NASA, and the U.S. Patent Office, in the latter taking the form of government-owned patents. Meanwhile, urban, health, and transportation fields beckon with unsolved problems of magnitudes equaling or exceeding those of the Apollo Man in the Moon program, recently concluded. The big differences between the older class of technology challenges and the new ones lie in the vast scopes of those new problem areas, the relatively small fundings available, and the near absence of any centralized point of direction and support. For another thing, it is unlikely that huge industrial complexes will be able to dominate civic sector business as they have dominated the military and space efforts. Smaller companies are in the act as prime contractors to local cities and states, and specialization, favorable to the smaller firm, appears to be an effective selling tool in this market area. Because of the shortage of R&D funding and the almost total lack of background in most of the companies entering the civic technology market, little wonder that many are looking to the past defense and space efforts for ideas, and even for products. That basically is what technology utilization is all about. Soundings This Issue visits WESCON 72 to learn more about technology utilization. Our first speaker is Ronald L. McGinley, who heads the technology utilization effort at Martin Marietta Corporation in Denver. Ron has a specific proposal for how a large company, let's say one currently in aerospace, can set up a technology utilization effort.
My paper is entitled "The Problem-Oriented Approach to Technology Transfer." This approach places emphasis on the identification of marketplace problems and needs. The objective of the problem-oriented approach includes better management and greater utilization of government-sponsored technology, improvement of the technology transfer process, increased efficiency of our R&D efforts, and enhancement of the cross-pollination process between those professionals in various functional areas. Specifically, I offer an approach to technology transfer, something you can do in your firm, something you or your firm can do. The approach starts with the identification of market problems and needs. It employs the principles and procedures of creative problem solving, and it uses the alternatives spawned in an idea finding process as a framework for searching for the most relevant research and technologies. From this point, evaluation, solution finding, acceptance, and implementation ensue. Now, I'm looking mostly at a larger firm, a high technology firm, and I focused on this. Implied in this kind of an approach, basically because this kind of capability generally exists, is the development of a comprehensive file, a technology database, if you wish to call it that. And also, to support the technology transfer function, there would be the employment of a technology transfer team. We would use this team as a catalyst in the adapting or utilizing of technologies, adapting them to the market problems. In firms such as my firm and the aerospace group of this corporation, we have many problems, many opportunities and challenges. One of the most perplexing is the productivity of our research and development effort. Critics say that there is all too little innovation, all too few ideas, and all too few successes in exploiting the ideas and technologies that do present themselves. Some of this criticism is justified, but this problem has really been compounded in recent years because there has been a tendency to curtail these expenditures. Principally, in my experience, it has been because past efforts have not paid off or have not shown almost instantaneous results, something that you could show on the bottom line of your financial statement. I must concede that there certainly does appear to be a gap between innovation and technology utilization. Certainly it appears this gap exists in large firms, in major incubator organizations, and certainly in some government agencies. In fact, the Defense Blue Ribbon Panel reporting to President Nixon and Secretary Laird specifically cited the low productivity of these firms in relation to the substantial investment. These conditions seem to dictate a couple corrective measures to me, at least a couple possibilities. One is organizational change may be in store. Organizational change that would encourage innovation. It would improve idea generation. A second possibility is the better management of the ideas, the technologies that we have before us. One way to do this, to improve the generation of good ideas, to increase the efficiency of R&D efforts, to improve the management of technology, is to establish a problem-oriented technology transfer function. Now, the objective of this technology transfer function would be to pull together professionals from various functional areas so that they could apply the best resources, capabilities, and process, the most relevant research, to the problems and needs of the marketplace. In doing this, a technology transfer team would enter into some idea-finding process with a well-defined problem. And this problem should be defined in a rather broad sense, such that you would not preclude some alternatives. In this idea-finding process, then, a forced brainstorming technique would be employed. The technique is designed to increase ideation. Then again, a follow-up would be conducted, an evaluation process, if you will, where you would systematically review the ideas and the alternatives. Review the technologies and innovations, both past and present, maybe they're 8 years old, to ensure that a reasonable approach is being taken, the best conceivable approach to you is being taken. Now, key to this process is the forced association of the knowledge and experience that the team actually has, possesses, and has acquired. There is also better contact between technical people and marketing people because you're doing this. And implied is better management and better utilization of your ideas and technologies. Now, we know that few companies have done anything quite like this. Few companies have organized a technology transfer function. Few companies have charged such a function with the management of technology, with exploiting new ideas and technologies. And even fewer companies have been successful in exploiting or utilizing technologies, although the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, the Atomic Energy Commission, Department of Defense, Bureau of Standards, and other agencies have advanced technologies in behalf of various industries, or in fact have significant technology transfer efforts. We know too that Congress has made no secret of their disappointment in the rate of technology utilization. In short, if you and your firm were working to improve technology transfer, you would find the conditions right. We certainly have the know-how to address this perplexing problem of low innovation, low technology utilization. We certainly have the challenge, we have the opportunity to get more mileage out of our R&D efforts. We have the opportunity to create an atmosphere that is more conducive to innovation, something that's closer maybe to that small innovative firm. And certainly we have the opportunity to add new direction and vitality to our firms. If these things are done, I think it will make contributions to the morale of your personnel in general, as well as improving your market effectiveness and market development, because you're opening new channels of communication between your marketing force, your technical people, and the marketplace. Now, what are the means to doing this? What are the means to the solution? The actual process or the function that I I have in mind, as I said, is very market-oriented. You begin, the first step is sensitivity to and good definition of market needs. As I said earlier, the problem definition should be sufficiently broad such that you wouldn't preclude many things. You might state a problem such as this. How might I improve parking in downtown Santa Barbara? And you might restate the problem. And if you decide you really want to do that, and the real thing you're after is better ways of handling the cars, you might restate it in such a way that it would change the verb, and it would say, how might I store cars? And all kinds of new things might come to your mind just by changing that around. But once you've done this, once you've begun to list many, many different means to this solution, you might then begin to ask yourself, how do we satisfy the particular needs or problems by applying our unique capabilities, our unique resources, or by applying in new ways our old ideas or our old technologies and techniques and processes? And I don't care whether they're from internal or external sources. Don't limit yourself to habit or to what has been conventional. The next step in the process then is the evaluation. It's to screen the alternatives spawned by this brainstorm session. And then you use those that really appear to be promising as a framework in searching for the most relevant research and technology. This search is facilitated by a comprehensive file on your internal capabilities and resources. Of course, it could be very time-consuming. It could be costly to provide such a file with the capabilities needed. Now, certainly we know that there are many such software programs, information retrieval systems, automatic data processing, document processing systems, rather, that certainly do exist with these capabilities. One such program that I knew of is a formatted file system. It was developed by IBM for Air Force intelligence work. The formatted file system could be modified and adapted for such a comprehensive file. The formatted file system seems especially suited for this application, since it is a collection of interrelated stored programs designed to perform a variety of data handling tasks with the minimum of external intervention. These stored programs are capable of operating on many different files of information within a wide range of data specifications. The data description must be provided by the user, and it becomes part of the database. Now, I think to do this, a database manager is very desirable. A database manager should be appointed and made responsible for the setup and control of the file. And this certainly is no small task. He would oversee the process of cataloging, categorizing, and characterizing the resources and the capabilities, as well as old ideas, computer programs maybe, processes, and again, from external or external sources. He would utilize the data descriptions for the control of the file. He would put data into the file, and he would use these for maintenance of the file, for the preparation of reports generated from the file. The contents of the formatted file should be based upon the user's needs. The form of data within the file could be unprocessed, data extracted from documents, for instance, finished intelligence, or index-typed information. The determining factor, again, is the control of the format file as required and expressed by the user. Having treated the file, the comprehensive file, and having cataloged and categorized the internal and external capabilities, the next step in the development of a viable problem-oriented program is the establishment of the technology transfer team, or teams, if you will. I think team chairmen should be designated. These people, I think, should be business and technical composites, maybe a marketing type with good technical backgrounds. Certainly, if he's going to use the approach that I recommend, he would be someone familiar with creative problem-solving techniques. And he should begin, certainly, by identifying market needs and problems, customer and potential customer needs and problems. With a specific challenge of the market defined, then, the technology transfer team should enter into this brainstorming session that I alluded to earlier. The chairman would present the problem in a rather free-willing manner, and maybe it would be defined just as I did the parking problem, or something like that. And in this session, he would pull in representatives from, or specialists from any functional area, and maybe even outside consultants. Several alternatives to the problem should come out. Several means to the solution should come out of this brainstorming session. And then the alternatives, those that look promising, would be screened. Those that look promising would be used as a framework in querying the file. The reports generated from the comprehensive file would provide a user of the technology transfer team with the intelligence necessary to enable an alternative evaluation process. The reports should provide the technology transfer team with knowledge of what has been done and who is doing it and where it is being done. And this could be very important, who is doing it, because if you don't have such an in-house capability, you may even want to hire some of these people. In short, you should get just about all that's relevant to the problem at hand. And the next step is then the narrowing of the alternatives in light of the intelligence gained from this comprehensive file. The alternatives offer the most promising approach in terms of development time, cost, marketability, profitability, and so on would then be those that you choose to implement. Again, the process should have technical and marketing people involved. They should stay abreast and participate in any survey, follow-on survey, and cost analysis, and plan formulation, and certainly the ensuing acceptance process. This market survey should be designed to expand, certainly, your knowledge of the problem area or the market need, and to answer specific questions like the size, the growth potential, the possible market posture, strategies of competitors, and so on. Should the market survey then be positive, cost analysis indicated acceptable return on the investment, the next step is the development of that comprehensive marketing plan. A cursory analysis of the kind of activities involved in this function indicate that there are many homes for such a function. You could put it in your engineering or research and development organization, your marketing or your advanced programs area. I favor marketing for such a place, for such a function. I favor marketing because the program or the function is very market-oriented. An analysis might include the following. What functions are to be performed? What activities go into each of these functional areas? What decisions must be made? What's the nature and frequency of these decisions? Who participates in them? Who must be advised and apprised of the decisions? And certainly, what is the significance as far as long-term commitments and so on are concerned? Once you make that kind of analysis and look at the patterns of interrelationships, the upward, downward, the crosswise communications, I think you will conclude, as I have, that the technology transfer function should be market-oriented, should be central and close to the helm.
Our second speaker is Dr. Marshall E. Alper from the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, one of our large government-funded R&D centers. Mickey Alper describes some of the experiences JPL has had in establishing a track record in the civic sector.
The first experience I had in technology transfer was in trying to transfer technology developed by one of my own research and development groups into one of my project application groups. It turns out that was pretty difficult, and I think anybody who pretends that transferring technology from a whole complex of industries that have been working in aerospace, defense, and nuclear energy for 30 years into the civil sector is going to be easy is smoking something, and it's not a cigarette. An awful lot of work has been done and will continue to be done. And someday, I hope, we'll all find some useful and interesting solutions. I'd like to define technology, and this one's out of some dictionary or other. It's the totality of the means employed by a people to provide itself with the objects of material culture. I think it's important that we note totality and the word means and the word provide, which means technology which is left lying around or dreaming in somebody's mind someplace is not really what we're talking about. It's got to wind up providing something to somebody. If I take a look at the kind of technology that I think of as an aerospace individual, I talk about hardware and software, and we've got lots of procedures and process books and 5-foot shelves of how you get from here to there. But I think in the 20 years of defense and space, we've done some other things also. We've also come up with some very interesting organizational structures and the techniques by which they're managed. And we've also developed an awfully lot of understanding about interpersonal relationships and the roles that they play in coming through with an effective program. All of our problems, when you really get down to them, are one way or another traceable to people problems. And people problems and how you solve them in the form of either an organizational structure, the management procedures and processes that go to running one, and the interpersonal relationships which you either try to build up or sometimes you have to try to destroy them in order to be successful, I think are part of this technology that we talk about transferring. We obviously have a user to worry about, and I think one thing in the civil sector that becomes interesting to note is that very often the user is not represented any place in the process. The user of a healthcare delivery system is a sick guy who lives on 110th Street. He usually has very little to say. The medical people, the federal agencies, the local public health service or whatever take over his job for him. So we've got an interesting problem in terms of defining who the users are. Is the user the hospital administration, the physician, or is it the sick guy who walked in the door? If we're going to use this technology, there must be a marketplace. And a marketplace is a place where, as you know, people trade things and usually buy things for money, which means that whatever is offered for sale has to really solve a problem, and the buyer has to be convinced enough to lay his money on the line to buy the darn thing. We talk about application. I know of one hospital that has a nice machine for $70,000, which it's used twice in the last year and a half. It's got two problems. One, the company that sold it to them doesn't have a service organization, so when it breaks down, nobody can fix it. And two, 99% of the hospital staff doesn't know how to use it. If they had somebody who did, and if they could keep it in repair in the first place, they'd have a very valuable tool and they could apply it. So this application business, I think, implies a whole host of things that we in the industry have to recognize and that we have to recognize on the part of the people who use what we have to sell. Very often they're not used to our technology and they don't really appreciate everything that goes into being able to apply it to solve their problems. Finally, acceptance. The physicians at the hospital I just mentioned, they're a little bit leery about people who come peddling technology to them now. They already saw what $70,000 can do. So I think this question of acceptance on the part of a user who is not familiar with or accustomed to using the kind of technology which we in aerospace have developed is a problem which must be recognized, admitted to, understood, and addressed. And it's not a very easy thing to do. We talk about levels of transfer. We think about devices you can transfer. I make Gidget 2, and you happen to be in a different industry, and you can use Gidget 2. And that's nice, and that's easy, and I sell it to you, and you buy it, and everybody's happy. It's rare that that happens. Very often what you need is something like Gidget 2, but not quite. And you don't have enough money to pay me to develop it, and I'm not about to risk my limited capital to develop it because I'm not sure your market really wants it. And there we sit with Gidget 1 3/4 waiting to become Gidget 2, and how do we get there from here? We also talk about transferring systems. The BART system is maybe a system that's transferred, although it started some 20 years ago and it's not done yet. How would aerospace tackle a BART job? And in fact, is it possible for aerospace to tackle a BART job? I think if one looks at the kind of broader systems we talk about, one's immediately struck by the fact that you don't have a single project manager in a large government agency which has a lot of money who can go and make decisions. We're talking about addressing public bodies, public servants, people who stand for election or who stand for appointment, and they really have 200 million users and 200 million judges and 200 million deciders. And the business of selling, defining, engineering a system in the civil sector, I think, is going to be a very difficult thing to do. We also have a methodology we can transfer. And by that, I mean we understand certain things about managing complex, interactive kinds of problem solutions. We know how to perform certain kinds of studies, which some management can then use to base a decision on. We know how to design, define, and innovate and invent systems. We know how to build the devices that the systems require to function. We know how to write the procedures that the people who operate those systems must have in order to go. I've seen some civil sector applications which were quite good, but they failed for one simple reason. Somebody forgot that it was important to spend the money to write a procedure for how to use this darn thing. It doesn't take too many failures in the public eye to convince a public servant that he doesn't want any part of what you have to sell. I don't think in the civil sector we can afford the kind of quality assurance and reliability we've become used to in the space business. But we have to be a little bit careful about the kinds of risks and the kinds of failures we're willing to expose a publicly elected official to if we expect to see those people use what we have to offer. I'd like to discuss three specific examples that the laboratory has been involved in over the last 3 or 4 years, describe them just briefly, and then draw some conclusions. And I must confess that the conclusions are not drawn from these three examples alone. They're drawn from a much larger activity, which these are just a part of. The three I'd like to talk about is a miniature biotelemetry system, a private alarm signaling system, and a healthcare delivery system. In the miniature biotelemetry, there's a white rat. He's inside a plastic cage, and there's a cable bundle running from a connector on his head to a counterweighted arm on top. He's used in neurological research, and he has 10 electrodes implanted in his brain, and the researcher wants to be able to have him move around and do things and record the neural signals that are coming from the places where the electrodes are implanted. The rat, under those conditions, is not the happiest in the world. There's an awful lot of chaff and noise that comes from the interconnects in the cabling system, and it's not the easiest thing in the world for that rat to move around. The solution, the rat with a rat hat on. He's a lot happier without the cables. His base of excursion is much broader than it was with the cable bundle on, and the researcher is happier because he gets better data faster this way. His hat is a miniature biotelemeter. It has 10 channels of physiological data. It's wideband, 5 kilohertz per data bandwidth per channel, and it'll take 20,000 samples per second per channel. We chose this particular example because it's about the most demanding of the neurological signals to have to transmit. The design of the system is such that you can turn it into a 50-channel system if you're willing to cut down the bandwidth per channel or the sampling rate. So we should be able to handle and adapt it easily, or somebody should be able to handle and adapt it easily to other applications. It's miniature, 3/4 of a cubic inch and weighs 16 grams, and it's not got much of a power requirement. The system is laid out on a series of circuit boards which flip-flop together and can be taken apart so they can be repaired fairly easily or replaced if you want to change just a part of one of the functions. Turns out this device is also useful in terms of monitoring a physical exam. If you're taking a physical exam and somebody wants you running on a treadmill while they record heart rate and a few other things, it's a lot easier to use one of these things than it is to wire you up. We developed this in response to a physiological research program. It was designed with the broader concerns of biomedical telemetry in mind, and hopefully, it will be field-tested by a variety of medically interested users. The government holds whatever patents are available on it, I believe, and if it proves to be useful, hopefully somebody will want to buy one someday, and then we approach the other end of the transfer problem. The private alarm signaling system
which is the second example I'd like to talk about for a minute, was spawned after a riot in a high school in Sacramento and after a period of problem definition which was engaged in by the high school teaching administrative personnel as well as some laboratory people. We developed, among other things, a requirement for an emergency communication system which was simple, inexpensive, portable, and reliable. The team also developed some requirements for some social innovation in terms of community communications and some things to handle some job problems and things like that, which are clearly not something that technology can directly contribute to, at least not in that neighborhood environment. It was interesting, though, that the study process did identify things which should be done, and the school staff, plus their socially oriented supporting elements, have conducted a program which has improved their community relations aspect of the problem. We chose to develop the technological requirement or a device which would satisfy the technological requirement of the emergency communication situation. A teacher has an acoustic device which he carries around with him. It's pen size. At selected locations, every classroom, some hallways, some of the playing fields and things like that, there is a specially designed receiver, and it's only special in the sense that it's designed to eliminate false alarms due to noise problems, which is connected to a display panel in some central administrative office. If you have an emergency, student cut his hand, epileptic had a seizure, a couple of kids start a riot, you trigger the acoustic device, microphone picks it up, a buzzer and a light light up, and the person in the administrative office uses a walkie-talkie to ask a hall monitor, who's also equipped with a walkie-talkie, to go get help. Response time was tested over a period of a year. This was field tested in the school. Response times to most all the situations was less than a minute, and the false alarm rate was finally wound up to be about less than one per week. We looked into a whole class of solutions to this problem, decided on the acoustic one for lots of reasons, primarily because you can get acoustic isolation. And if you signal something in a classroom, the light signaling that the thing came on in the hall won't go on, but the classroom light will. System's fairly simple. It's been patented. The government holds a patent and has awarded a license. And there's a company now producing this thing, and school systems can, and one has, bought the thing on the open market. This, I guess, is the closest to a technology transfer that we've accomplished, in that we found from field test and evaluation that the device does solve a problem from the school administration's point of view. It's their problem, and they think it solves it. It's out of our hands and now is being produced by industry, and somebody else who's got a similar problem can go buy one. So that's as nice as you can get. The pen signaling device is just about the size of a fountain pen, a little bit fatter. The pickup that we use has been redesigned by the company that's now selling the thing, and the display board's a fairly simple device. We are involved with a hospital in looking at a healthcare delivery system. The objectives are to identify and implement methods to improve the quality of healthcare. And of course, one of the difficult things there is to get together with the medical community in the hospital and define what you mean by quality of healthcare in the first place, so that after you've done something, you can find out if you've satisfied that objective. We started out working with them to define the system in detail, to define specific objectives that they and we could agree to and that both of us could understand and that we could measure. Look at the functional structure of the system that's now used, including the private practitioners and the public agencies and everybody else who provides healthcare in the area. Identify the needs of the people, the ultimate users of such a system, even though they don't have much of a direct voice in it. And then come up with what we're familiar, of course, in aerospace, competing characteristics and criteria. What kinds of things are more important than what other things, and how do you judge when you've done what you said you were going to do? It's been a stimulating activity, most stimulating perhaps from the viewpoint of working with a medical community and finding physicians who get turned on by working with a group of people and the synergism of grappling with very difficult to define problems and trying to put them into number form. One, at least, of the medical people has already changed his idea of how he wants to run his department. As a result of the needs analysis for the area the hospital serves, the medical people and the medical administration decided, not we, that they would like to concentrate on maternal and infant care emergency care, and health testing, with the maternal and infant care a clear first priority. It turns out that after the analysis, they found that their problem was much worse than they had expected it to be. It's important to note, however, that it was their decision to pick these priorities, and it was their decision that these were their needs. We participated in developing a database and presenting it to them in such a way that they could make up their minds. If you look at these three examples, the miniature biotelemetry, the private alarm signaling system, and the hospital care, the healthcare delivery system, and look at the four characteristics: the complexity of the user, the complexity of the interfaces between the user, the marketplace, the technical developers, and so on, the complexity of where the funding is going to come from, which is partly related to the amount of funding required, and also partly related to the complexity of the interfaces that are involved, and the complexity of technology that's involved in each of these cases, it becomes a sort of an interesting example. Miniature biotelemetry, we had, in our case, a single user, the researcher. The interface was a simple one. He told us what he needed. He didn't give a darn about the technology we used to get it to him, and he sort of walked away, and we walked away, and he was delighted when it turns out we were successful. The complexity of funding, in this case, was simple. It was a NASA-funded program on our part, and he already has an ongoing NIH grant with which he will use to buy these systems for his research. The complexity of the technology was fairly high. It's a sophisticated little biotelemeter. Private alarm signaling system, the complexity of the user, the interfaces, and the funding is sort of medium all the way around. There were a fair number of people to talk to, but we cut out the clearly technological part of this thing, so it was a little bit simpler to do. The interfaces were simple. We only worked with one school. Of course, there were some 50 teachers and a dozen and a half people in administration. And a fair amount of time went into meetings with them. The complexity of technology in this case was reasonably low. There really is nothing very new about it, and most of the darn thing came about in the process of getting to a definition of the problem, which the school people agreed to was in fact their problem, and which after some field tests they agreed to that this solution to that problem was acceptable to them. That was the hardest part of the job. In the healthcare delivery system, everything's high except the complexity of technology, and that's going to vary all over the map, from simple, obvious kinds of things, which are new to medical people but old to most of the rest of us, to some awfully complex kinds of things for everybody concerned. But there you've got a tremendously complicated user, because the user is not simply defined. The whole community is, in effect, part of the user, including the private physicians. And they must be considered any time you look at that as a system if you're going to do anything effectively in the area, because they do carry a voice. The complexity of the interfaces is equally high. You've got a lot of public agencies involved in healthcare, public health service, local agencies, regional agencies, medical schools. The complexity of funding is also high. There are lots of different funding sources which provide pieces of the services that in fact go into a healthcare system. And the technology is going to vary from very simple kinds of things to very, very complicated modern instrumentation. The civil sector has got a different experience base. It's had a different amount of money pumped into it, but it's there. And I guess I've begun to think rather that we infuse our technology into an existing technology than to try to transfer it. Primary reason for thinking that is when you talk about transferring something I have to something you have, you come across as sort of high-handed and arrogant. And anytime you want to do something with somebody, the last way to begin is to come across as high-handed and arrogant. But I think it's important to recognize that that civil sector has its own technology across the board. There are lots of reasons why it needs to be made more adequate, but we have to be careful about our relationships with the people we work with. The experience we've had says that our most difficult problem is communication. The civil sector and the aerospace sector come from two different worlds and two different backgrounds. And even though we all use English, we don't always talk the same language. They've got a different class of problems than we're used to, and a different set of constraints. And communication, by all means, is one of our most important stumbling blocks. You need to feedback, you need to talk to a lot of people, you need to work at it, work hard at it, and consider it, in fact, to be a very difficult thing to do. There are many places in the civil sector which recognize this as well as we. And I think you'll find that they're perfectly willing to cooperate, but it can be very difficult. You need to be able to develop relationships. You find somebody in the civil sector and he's sitting with his pants wide open and he stands for re-election in 4 years. And when you come in with a new novel idea that's going to save his umpty-ump department or something, he's the guy who stands for election, not you. And he basically has to put some trust of his and his department people in what you tell him. You can't expect these people who have different constraints and different pressures on them to necessarily welcome you with open arms. Many of them have tried before and have been bitten before by sad experiences, and you have to take some positive steps to develop the kind of relationship which lets them trust you. Finally, experience teaches that problem definition is a very important problem. People in the civil sector are inundated with the requirement to satisfy daily operational requirements. You want your garbage picked up, you expect your water to be pure, you expect when you flush your toilet, the sewer doesn't back up all the way. You take a funds-limited city trying to solve those problems and then ask it to look very far in the future, and it's not always most receptive. It tends to see its problems very much colored by the thing which is only 2 feet away, or next year, or 6 months downstream. It doesn't tend to think of, where am I going to be 5 years from now? The larger cities do. Many of the smaller cities don't and can't. The problem definition, I think you'll find, has to be iterated. You bring a new technology which opens up new vistas. People without the experience of using that technology define a problem. Take the problem definition warily. Reiterate it with them, because you may find that after some consideration, the problem, you know, that's not really my problem. Really, my problem's over there, and this is only a symptom of it. It's a hard thing to do, and it's not always the most adequately funded area of any of the demonstrations or grant programs around. There are still some needs to be met. You need intermediaries. It'd be awful nice for industry to be able to go to one of 50 school boards at the state level and talk to them about school problems and selling to the X thousand school boards in the state than it is for industry to have to go market to X thousand school boards. There is a people problem. People who are familiar with aerospace are not familiar with cities and their problems in detail. Their problems are considerably different. They're much greater in magnitude, and they're much more dependent on people and people-related kinds of concerns and problems. The city people don't have the experience with technology and advanced development and testing and criteria and numbers and goals and those kinds of things. So the people problem in terms of getting people with two different experiences to be able to walk down the same road hand in hand and be happy at the end of the journey is very important. The question of public sector capability is also one which is a difficult one to get around sometime. Larger communities have technical capability of their own. Many small communities don't. They have a department head who graduated a school of civil engineering 30 years ago. Maybe there are some young Turks working for him, but they have a tough time. The question of public sector capability is one which still needs to be addressed. There are a couple of kinds of things, I think, which can be done to infuse our technology. We can talk about people exchange. It might be interesting to develop a program where companies, at some meaningful cost-sharing kind of arrangement, permit their people to work for an agency of local government. Bring a guy who used to wear a spacesuit and stick him in a fire department, and let him actually live and work there for a while, and see how he can then apply his technology to help define and solve problems. The other way, of course, is some kind of a meaningful partnership between ourselves and the people who have to supply these public services. That, I think, is the message I leave. We have to exchange people and develop a partnership, because neither alone is going to be sufficient.
You've reached the end of side one. To continue, stop your cassette player, turn over the cassette, and restart the machine.